Hello and welcome to Beheaded.
Welcome to season 4, episode 1.
I'm Megan Moore.
I'm Elizabeth Black.
Welcome back.
We're back, everybody, after a long hiatus, which is our normal length of time for a hiatus, but it felt long this time.
I think there's just a lot going on, and we've been really eager to talk about things.
Yes.
We miss you. We miss talking to our imaginary friends out there.
They're real friends. They're real friends, and they've been waiting.
We have some real friends.
It's funny, the people that have been listening for a few years, because they're like, when does it start again? I'm like, the same time it always starts every year. It's not like we have a set date, I guess. But, you know, roughly, you know, the season.
If you're listening to this on our opening night, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Ooh. I love spooky season.
We have to start the season off with like something spooky.
Yeah.
You know, we're just we're spooky gals.
We spooky like Halloween. Gals. We talk about spooky things.
I feel like we're different people now since we've last been on the show. We're so different.
I'm just more mature now, significantly.
We've had lots of experiences and changes.
Well, Megan has the biggest update, right? Because if you didn't see, or if you're new to the podcast, Megan went to London.
Yeah.
In June.
Not the same person.
No. She's very worldly and cultured now.
It met every expectation I ever, ever, ever could have dreamed of. And I dreamed of it for a very long time. For those who maybe are a little bit newer to the show, can kind of do like a very, very brief introduction. But obviously we're from America, we're from Arizona, but I have been obsessed with British history since I was like 9, 10, really about 12. I think I got really into it, but it's been a lifelong dream to finally go to England, and it happened, and it was spectacular. I cried. I'm not a crier. I'm not a very emotionally sensitive person.
Yeah.
Ooh, there were some moments. Tower of London did not let me down.
Ugh. Yeah.
I had a membership pass. So, and my hotel was directly across the street from it, which is just, I think one of the weirdest things is when you think you can visualize it so much until you're actually standing there.
Yeah.
And a part of it felt familiar because I've seen so many pictures and documentaries. A part of it felt like, oh, I've seen this, I've seen that.
Right.
But when you're actually standing there, and then you kind of understand the proximity of everything.
Yeah.
So you can kind of figure out, okay, this is Tower Hill. This is where the executions took place. I can now envision this, how far that is from the White Tower to where they were imprisoned, and they would have to do the Walk of Shame out. All that said, Tower of London, I went back 3 or 4 times, I think, in a 1 week span. I was obsessed.
Yeah.
I couldn't get away from it. That did not let me down. It was definitely just emotional walking into it. There were waterworks. I was crying. And I think an even more emotional day was I was there on May 19th on Anne Boleyn's anniversary. And it was everything I wanted, and I got to lay the roses down. And it was really cool because the other people who were showing up to pay their respect for her were obviously very diehard fans also.
Oh, yeah.
So we just stood there in a circle talking about Anne Boleyn for like 40 minutes. I was like, I do need to go. But anyways,
before she left, she probably knocked over a person, spilled a bunch of Beheaded business cards, and was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Just littered everywhere.
You were not meant to see these, but do you want to see them? Do you want to talk about it?
I didn't. Okay. I didn't quite do that. I definitely talked to a lot of people, though, about the podcast and met a lot of really cool people. And I don't want to reveal too much, but there are going to be some pretty amazing guests here in season 4.
Yes, that is very exciting. And some of these guests knew about us.
Like, yeah.
We had, obviously we've gained a little bit of a following over the past few years that we've done this.
I have a horn somewhere. I'm going
to
toot it.
Not to brag. But, a few of the people, and Megan had called me or FaceTimed me every time she had met someone. She's like, oh my gosh, guess who I met? And guess what they said? They said they know us and they've listened to this episode.
Which just made me that much more embarrassed listening back to our early episode. episode.
Yeah, we'll talk get
into
that.
We'll get into that. How about you, though? Because when we landed on season three, you were like, I'm just going to be lazy this summer and float around in a pool.
That was the goal. I told you guys, like, when we ended the last season, I was like, I want no plans. I want to just chill in the pool, do my floaties, all that stuff. And life hack, don't ever tell people that you have nothing to do, because then Murphy's Law, like, all of a sudden people are like, great, you're free. You can visit me. You can come here. You can do this. So in that time, I went to like two weddings on the East Coast last minute. I went up to Napa for a cousin's birthday. I went to Utah for a week to see my friend. Like, stuff that I was like, as much fun as it was, right? It was great. I liked it. But I was also like, I just really wanted a lazy summer. And it ended up, I had to like travel a couple times for work. It just got out of hand. So I feel like I didn't have much of a break. It was a little kind of crazy hustle and bustle. I mean, it was fun. Again, sure. But my goal of floaties didn't quite happen. I maybe had like two or three good floaty days. And
way more than you.
Exactly.
Because I came back early June.
Yeah.
So I still had June, July, August to do nothing.
No.
I have – see, so if you don't have as many friends –
oh, please.
No, you don't have to do as much.
It wasn't a friend issue. It was the fact that I kept announcing, like, I have nothing to do all summer. And people were like, great, let's stuff your schedule. So that was a little unfortunate. But at the very tail end of the summer, Megan and I had this planned for a few months, and we were so excited that we finally got to do it. Mm-hmm. We saw Six, the musical that came through Phoenix, and we were in love. So love. In love. Oh, my God. It was – we didn't know what to expect. Obviously, we knew all the music and all the songs and the costumes. Mm-hmm. So, like, we knew a fair amount, but we didn't know how much other story there was going to be. And we don't want to spoil anything if you haven't seen it, but we were first row.
Of course.
First row at the show and just, like, blown away. And I think we were probably annoying everyone around us because, of course, me and Megan are just, like, singing.
Oh, we were so obnoxious.
And, like, I tried to really restrain the first couple of songs. Like, oh, I'm just politely tapping my foot. And then it kind of was, like, by the end, we're, like, pumping
just
our
fists. Escalated. For those who don't know, Six, the musical, it's a really upbeat, pop-type Broadway musical about the six wives of King Henry VIII. Of course, right up our alley.
Oh, yeah.
But it's very like, cheeky. Like, is that the word, tongue-in-cheek? Is that the phrase?
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, almost a risque, like, take on it. Because they, you know.
Yeah, there's some dirty parts.
There's
some
funny. Dirty jokes, some inside jokes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tongue-in-cheek.
They performed it in front of Hampton Court Palace in the summer. Oh. So that would have been really cool.
I was going to say, I messaged Megan when I saw that. I was like, please tell me you're going to be there when they're there.
That was, like, a week after I left. Okay. It just, the stars didn't line up. Yeah. But I think that would have been a weird combination of something so modern in front of Hampton Court Palace. But, you know.
Yeah. I feel you.
They had great merch. Oh, yeah. Good merch.
We were the last ones in line for the merch.
We always got to get walked out at the end somehow.
We have to be the last people in any venue ever. But yeah, we were literally the last ones. We even said, we're like, are you guys waiting on us to close? They're like, yeah, kind of.
Yes, we are. I'm like, okay, well, I just want this mug and this magnet and this and that. Yeah, so. No, we've had a good time. Good. So as I had mentioned, we went through a bit of an activity, and it was so painful.
It wasn't that bad.
It was torture.
No.
When we talk about torture, this was torture. Elizabeth made me listen to our first episode.
It's not that bad. Okay.
It wasn't good.
But the good thing about that episode is we give all the disclaimers in the world. Like, we start off that podcast being like, yo, hi, here's us. We don't know what we're doing. Like, we're on Guitar Hero microphones. We just like to talk about executions. Here we are. So we don't really, like, have a structure or, like, you know, a way we do our episodes yet. We didn't even have, like, an opening sequence. We didn't have an order of events. We just, like, jumped into the execution.
We started off with her final words.
I think so.
Yeah. Of her execution. Yeah. Also, do you use my pants are unzipped? I'm sorry.
Would you like to zip those up right now?
No,
just leave them.
Leaving them unzipped.
Should I unzip mine? Mine's in the back. That'd be
should
weird.
Should we just get naked?
Should we just get naked right now?
So where I'm going at with this, I did a survey over the summer, and I said, should we redo Marie Antoinette's episode? yes, please, or God, no, please stop. And about 12% of people said, God, no, please just stop. But most people wanted to hear it. So for the 12%, sorry, have a nice day.
See you next time.
See your way out. No, we've got to do this woman right, because we were a disorganized bunch of banshees.
And again, it's still not that bad. Like, it's kind of an origin story for us, right? Like, I think it's cute because, like, we're still us. We're still talking. We're still saying dumb shit, you know? But we just didn't have any kind of real structure to the episode. We barely talked about, like, what she was charged with, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, how she got to that point. So today we want to really talk about Marie Antoinette.
Marie Antoinette, take two.
Yeah, do a take two. We want to actually talk about her upbringing and her early life. Like, we're going to kind of focus a little bit heavy on the early life too, and, like, a little bit more of the marriage and what that looked like with Louis XVI. And then at the end, obviously, we'll get to the meat of it, but we've already covered some of that in our very, very first episode. So yeah, we have to do this correctly. And if you're wondering too, we have done Louis XVI as a standalone episode.
Yes.
He was in season 2. So a lot of this information is also in that. But again, this is primarily focusing on Marie Antoinette herself, because she deserves to be done justice.
Yes.
and not through Louis' episode and not through our initial shitty first episode. So stick with us.
We also didn't even know. I was like, is it Louis the 14th? Is it the 16th?
I think we just both got confused because one of us started saying 14 and one of us started saying 16. And then we confused ourselves. Like, which one is it?
Made it the 15th and met in the middle. We'll do like a quick little like flashback too. So we can kind of like, if we have to experience this,
you have to experience this.
So me not knowing what Louis it even was.
Now it's King Louis the Fourth. King Louis
the Roman numeral.
Okay, we're trying to get the Roman, and I know. See,
okay, it's 14th. So no, it's for those of you listening and looking at this, perhaps it's XV1, which is
V1 or XV.
This is XV1.
The result, the Fourth of Mary.
I'm looking at Britannica,
and we have to go to. Oh no, you're right.
Which translate roughly to 10-5-1, so Louis 16.
Yeah. Okay.
We're kind of going back and forth. I called him randomly the 19th. She called him the 14th.
One of our like first listeners messaged us right after that episode and was like, here's like a diagram of Roman numerals so you can know in the future. We're like, oh.
I also remember getting feedback from a coworker. We're like, what did you think of our first episode of our first podcast? And she's like, it was really fun. But like, why was Marie Antoinette executed? And I remember Elizabeth just being like, both of us were like, really? You didn't get that? And now when I go back and listen, I'm like, wow, we actually didn't explain her charges at all.
No.
We just went straight to execution.
Right. And I mean, when you watch a movie, you don't go straight to the ending, right? Like, you gotta and get in love with the character. You gotta buy into the story. So that was the whole part we were missing.
We had no buildup. So we are going to build up.
We're gonna give you all the buildup.
Also, side note though, I am wearing my guillotine earrings.
They're beautiful.
In memory of Marie this evening.
I love them.
They're very appropriate.
You have to, if you haven't taken a picture of those, you have to take a good one of those. And Megan organized a very nice spread tonight. This is the first time she actually like sent me a cute little graphic of the menu.
Sent you a menu. Normally I just get it together an hour before you come. So I actually pre-planned.
So we had nice brie and crackers, and we had a French onion soup with the delectable Swiss top. We had macaroons for dessert.
We're having mini baguettes.
We're having Bordeaux wine right now. We're
very French.
We're very French.
We're basically French people right now.
Oh, yeah. And really quick status report. My Duolingo has come quite along, right?
That was the other part of the episode. Well, you're like, this
I literally
is my
started
friend.
Like, but that day. That day, I was like, you know what? I should start learning French and Duolingo.
I had the French translation, and I'm going to butcher this because I'm a day into Duolingo.
I'm
going to
behead it.
It's. Part of it might be accurate. I do not speak French. I've never tried, but this is cuisse manger de la brioche, which sounds like a mashup of Italian.
That's Elizabeth's very first French sentence.
I'm pretty sure that's accurate, though. I think I nailed it.
I'm proud to say I'm like a year and a half in.
You're going to have to help a lot with some of these names and phrases and places.
I will do
then.
My best. Again, I'm not fluent, but I am a lot better than the first episode.
And that first episode was 3 years ago.
That is kind of wild.
Isn't it?
Again, we're so grown up now.
That was just pre-pandemic. Who were we as people? Did we even know what life was about?
No.
No.
No, now we
were. I didn't know
home.
What a Bordeaux wine was, which is a red blend mix normally of a Cabernet and a Merlot. I've also been to France.
Now you know all this.
Since.
And in our first episode, I talked about like, oh, I've been to Versailles. And now you've been to Versailles.
You're right. I was also like, oh, I want to go there one day.
Now you have because you're an adult and we're just so cool now.
So mature. Okay. Yeah. So let's get into it. Introduce us to Marie Antoinette.
Okay. Marie Antoinette, the reprise. All right. I don't even think
sequel.
We talked about when she was born in the first one. Let's start there.
I also didn't know any of the years. I was like, it happened. I don't know what year.
We literally said that. Again, Megan can insert some things, but it was literally like, and I don't know what year this happened.
1700 something.
I think she had a kid.
The monarchy was abolished September 21st.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't know what year. That's really important.
Anyway, so let's start here. On November 2nd, 1775, Marie Antoinette
Hold on.
Did I already mess up?
You did. 1755.
Oh, I wrote it down wrong.
75, she's already married.
You're right. That's like the American Revolution. I'm dyslexic. I'm not. I'm fixing it in my notes right now.
I also was mad at how giggly I was in the first one, but I think that's just me.
No, I think we're just giggly.
I'm sorry. Just laugh a lot.
All right. Laugh along with
us. I just look at Elizabeth and start laughing every time.
Laugh with us.
Okay. Start. Try one more time. Take three.
Let's start with her year of birth, shall we? So, okay. Marie Antoinette was actually born Maria Antonia because she was born in Austria, and that was the original name she was given, on November 2nd, 1755. So she was born into royalty. She was born the Archduchess of Austria. Her mother was Empress Maria Theresa, and her father was Emperor Francis I. So they lived at Hofburg Palace in Vienna, Austria. And her father was also the Holy Roman Emperor of the time. So very, very aristocratic family. Her godparents were Joseph I and Mariana Victoria, who were the king and queen of Portugal. So like very elite family. The thing was about Maria Antonia, who we'll later call Marie Antoinette, is that she was the youngest daughter. So there's 15 kids in this family, and she's the second to youngest in the whole family and the youngest daughter. So, you know, she was just one of very many. Her mother was pretty, like, not, I don't want to say elderly because she's not, but she had siblings that were two decades older than her. Like, she was very much a child in this giant family of much older people. And one little note about her birthday. So November 2nd is All Souls Day, which is a day of mourning historically. So anytime that she celebrated a birthday, they actually kind of moved her birthday to November 1st for the celebration, because that's All Saints Day. And that's a little bit more of a celebratory
that's
day.
That's my mom's birthday.
That's what you said. The second is, right?
The second, November 2nd. So should I actually celebrate it on November 1st?
Probably.
Which if you're listening to this on Halloween, that's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. Out of respect, you should. Because they said, yeah, like the second is like a day of reverence and mourning. And like, you don't want to be celebratory on that day.
How funny.
I know.
Says so much
also,
about her life.
A little bit foreboding for Miss Marie Antoinette.
Oh, I thought you were going to say for my mom.
Not for your mother. never say that about your mother. But her whole family, again, because it was a very large family, they did a lot together. We were talking about this when we were watching one of the documentaries for Marie Antoinette before we got started. But it's a little bit reminiscent of like the Romanovs. Like they weren't just this big family in name only and kind of had their own lives. Like they were all very engaged with each other. They really enjoyed music and dancing and theater. Fun fact, Marie actually met Mozart when he was 6 years old. She was only a few months older than him, and they went to the same, like, musical school. She had, like, literally the best.
And what happened to her?
She was just, a nice girl.
Okay. She was pretty.
She was a pretty girl.
Yeah.
But it was kind of well known, and I think this is because she had so much family, that she wasn't the smartest kid. Hmm. I mean, she loved to dance. Like, she was poised. She could play the harp and the flute, and she had a good singing voice. But when it came to her studies, she was just so deficient. Like, she couldn't even write in her native language until she was almost, like, 12. And she had the best tutors in the world, like access to all the education. All of her family was very much intellectual. And she even, like most of the family, you know, her brothers and sisters were trilingual because they all spoke French, you know, that was their native tongue, but they lived in Austria. So a lot of them spoke German. A lot of them spoke Italian since they owned a lot of Italian land. So many people in her family were super studious, trilingual, like, you know, just great at all of these subjects. And again, because she was just so far down the line of kids, she kind of did whatever she wanted. She didn't really pay attention in school. She was noted for just being kind of lazy and frivolous, and she really disliked reading. They said when she did have an interest, she picked it up fast. Like, when it came to her sight reading with music, like, she could sight read like a professional when she was like an adolescent. So she definitely had like qualities of, you know, of brilliance. Like, there was times where it shone that anything she was really interested in, she tackled, and she really, like, you know, got at least proficient at some of these things. But no one was really thinking about preparing her for a royal life. I mean, yes, this family was already royal in their own right. But again, it wasn't like, oh, she's going to be a future queen. It was like, she's going to be a pretty courtier somewhere, like, bless Maria Antonia type of thing. So just quick background on her mother and father as well. But her mother was actually like a boss lady. I hate to even say that word, but she was just like crazy powerful. Her mother was basically head of the state for Austria, Hungary, Bohemia, and a bunch of other states. She had a very strong work ethic, and she was all about like keeping a schedule and staying very much on top of your responsibilities. And she taught all of this to her kids to the point where she was pretty detached as a mother. She wasn't super warm. She wasn't super motherly, super friendly. She was really hard on all of her kids, you know, and even though Maria Antonia's like education was lacking, she kind of called her out for that. She's like, you need to read more. Like, what's in your head? Like, you know, you need to make yourself like someone worth knowing. The father, on the other hand, Francis I, the emperor, was the more fun and frivolous guy who liked women and gambling. And even though he was married, like, was well known for his infidelity and basically left all of the responsibilities to his wife. He was a good father in that he was there for his kids and he loved embracing them and hanging out with them and having fun with them. So he actually had a really good relationship with Maria Antonia. But when it came to, again, being a father, being a leader, he was more just like a fun dad type of thing. So it was Maria Theresa who ultimately was the one arranging marriages and alliances for her children. Hmm. So she was the one who, after the 7 years' war with France, decided it's time to kind of put to bed all of these hostilities that we have with France. And King Louis XV, who was the king of France at that time, so I think it was actually King Louis who was the one that proposed it, but they came to an agreement like, hey, how about your son, Louis, marries my daughter, Maria Antonia? So they officially betrothed their two children, Maria Antonia, to Louis Auguste, who becomes Louis XVI of France. He's now the Dauphin of France.
And they were actually married by proxy at first.
Yes.
Which is always such a funny concept. So what that means is when somebody who is not the right person is standing there in lieu of that person. So the, like, on paper, it is that they are married. Right. But it was actually her brother stood in as the Dauphin.
Right.
So they kind of had their own separate weddings.
It's like a play wedding.
Yeah, play wedding. She was only 15 and he was 16. 14. 15?
She was 14, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. About to turn, well, sort of, I guess. Not really about to turn 15.
Going on 15.
Can always turn it into a song.
Yeah.
But they were married by proxy April 19th. And then May 14th, she met Louis for the first time. They actually met in a forest.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be very hard to not reference the Marie Antoinette movie from 2006 in a lot of this.
Yes.
But so we were rewatching it to get into the mood tonight and to you know, get quick, into the spirits.
Quick side note on that, yeah. too. Megan had to put in her, like, DVD, because that's how long she's had boy. This movie. She's like, the DVD still works on the Xbox. Like, let's put it in and play it.
Outdated. We're in 2022.
We're 34, okay?
I'm blowing off my DVD.
No, I'm 34. You're 32.
I'm 33.
Oh, you just turned 33.
Yeah.
I always think of you as 2 years, but you're 33 now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, early to mid-30s. So we still use DVDs, and it didn't work. So we rebought it on the digital copy.
I'm sad. I've had that DVD since 2007.
It probably works on some players still.
I want my money back. So keep working.
Write to Warner Brothers or whoever produced it. Excuse me.
I thought this was a life.
$17 on this movie. Can you please refund me?
I was a teenager when that movie came out, and I was obsessed from the beginning. I still love it. Like, yeah. I feel like my passion for this movie has never decreased. It's just
a good movie.
I get it. It's not the most historically accurate, but they do a pretty good job of hitting the main points of her life and really – there's not a lot of dialogue in that movie. It's just so visual and so pretty, and the music and the acting. Anyways, I can go about it all day. But that part was accurate, how they meet in the forest.
Yes.
And she does a whole scrub of Austria.
Yeah.
They rip Austria in every little shape, way, and form, even taking her dog away from her.
Mm-hmm.
And moving forward, once she meets Louis, she is now French.
Right.
And this was a pretty... obviously, groundbreaking moment for her. But I think if you imagine yourself being a young teenager and you are now have these expectations of marrying the future Dauphine? How do you say Dauphine? Dauphine of France.
Duolingo.
It's a pretty moving moment in her life. So when she first gets to court at Versailles, tell me if I'm not saying that right.
Versailles. Yes.
I always question my pronunciations on it.
Oh, that's good.
People were a little bit split about her. They either really liked her or really didn't like her.
Yes.
She was beautiful. She was fashionable. She was pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she could carry conversation and be a bit of a socialite. But people also didn't like her because they didn't – some people still didn't quite trust this alliance between France and Austria.
Yep.
She is still this foreign girl coming in. And I think if you're coming in with that type of an attitude, probably a little cocky, a little conceited. So it went one – people either liked her or hated her.
And one note about that, too, is her mother, Maria Theresa, that we already introduced, specifically told Marie Antoinette when she went to France, like, your job is to be as – like beautiful and charming and witty as possible. Like you want to attract people and I want them to say about me that I just sent them an angel. You know, so she mentioned nothing about like...
just keep your mouth shut and smile.
No.
Just look pretty.
Yeah, she was just like, I want you to just be this like beautiful person that they installed in court that everyone wants to get to know.
Well, one person who did not like her and that Marie also did not like in turn was Madame Du Barry.
Yes.
And this is the king's mistress. This is King Louis XV's mistress.
Right.
And she was a political influence, actually. But all of Louis XVI's aunts told Marie, do not trust that woman. Don't talk to her. Ignore her. And Marie did that. She very much snubbed her.
Right.
Which is not a good look when you're trying to be the most perfect daughter-in-law ever to the king of France.
Right. And this mistress was very important to the king. It wasn't like she was just some like lowly side piece. She was like the main mistress of the king at the time.
And she was a spicy one.
She was spicy.
She was... you know, I like, again, how the movie portrays her. She has, like, monkeys, and she's just very exotic.
Yes.
And, so, like, she is, like, fire, where Marie is just, like, pretty and flowery and very different. So Marie's mom has spies in the court, and everyone's telling her mother what is happening with her. Mm-hmm. And they start saying, like, you know, she's snubbing the king's favorite. And her mother says, no, 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 Marie. Like, again, trying to coach her and train her and teach her the ways of court. Mm-hmm. So she says, you have to talk to her. And this is on record. The only time that she really addresses her is on New Year's Day, 1772. She walks right up to her. She just says, there are a lot of people at Versailles today. And evidently that satisfied Dewberry. She was so like over ecstatic, like, oh, she does like me.
Right.
Look at that lovely conversation we just had.
Just reminds me of Mean Girls. Like on October 3rd, he asked me what day it was. It's October 3rd.
It's just the one sentence. Yeah. That's all it took. So all that said, just to kind of give you an impression of what her early days at court was like, on May 10th, 1774, Louis XV dies of tuberculosis.
Yes.
The very first thing that Louis XVI does, now that he is now king, is he exiles Dewberry, which makes a lot of people pretty happy, to be honest.
They're kind of relieved.
And almost instantly, Marie Antoinette takes on this lavish lifestyle. She mm-hmm. is now the queen of France, and yes. she is 19 years old.
Yes.
That's a lot of power, a right. lot of money.
Right. And I think she was also compensating for a little of lack of attention in the bedroom, perhaps.
Yeah. So what was her life like, Elizabeth? She is now the queen of France.
Yes. So I just alluded to this, but normally in these old-fashioned marriages of royalty, you know, they have to witness the consummation on the marriage night, right? Like as soon as you're married, you rush the couple to the bedroom and you say, all right, go ahead in front of all of us, like consummate this marriage. And they couldn't do it. Like they just, I don't know. I wasn't there to witness it, but didn't happen.
I really want to know what it was.
Yeah.
We talk about this a lot in the Louis the 16th episode too. Right.
And scholars speculate a lot of different things, but really quick, like we know for sure nothing happened because Louis even wrote in his diary, like, went to my chambers tonight, my wedding night, like, you know, nothing happened. And then he was like, Next night after that was like still alone in my chambers, like
playing with my locks and my books.
Yeah, like nothing happened.
He was a scholarly kind of guy.
He was, like where she was very extroverted and kind of flamboyant and, you know, exciting to talk to, he was shy and really held back. He really preferred reading and getting up early and just completely different kind of lifestyles and things that they were interested in. They couldn't be really more different at the beginning. So some scholars think that maybe he had some sort of physical thing that was kind of harming him. Like maybe sex was uncomfortable. Like maybe he had some sort of condition that didn't, you know, sit right. But more modern historians are actually saying they think it was purely psychological. Like if you really think about it, I mean, they got together when they were 14 and 15. So yeah. Like he probably was a virgin. He had no idea what he
probably,
was doing.
Probably, for sure.
Yeah. And like they didn't
taught him.
No one probably taught him, you know, and it's not like he's visiting brothels every night. As a kid, it's like, you know, it's literally just one of those things where it's so you don't talk about it with anybody. You mm-hmm. don't go to your brother and say, hey, like, what am I doing wrong? Like, no one talked about it. Everyone assumed that you would just kind of figure it out. So he's probably just completely out of his depth, has no idea what to do.
Oh, poor kid. You know? No sex ed back in 1774.
Exactly. So they were actually, they didn't consummate the marriage. And I don't want, well, we're going to talk about these years in between. But just so you know, they didn't consummate for 7 years. They had an unconsummated marriage for 7 years.
She was like 22.
Yeah, they were like 22 yeah. and he was like 23 when they finally actually, you know, when it ended up happening. So that's why a lot of people think like, yes, in her teen years, she was extremely frivolous. But they think that might have just been a way to compensate. Like if you're alone at Versailles, all you do is have people wait on you. You have no privacy because unlike Austria, where everything in Austria was very much like you had your private chambers, you were alone with your family, nobody was there for you all the time. You had to do small tasks yes. by yourself. Versailles was all about people everywhere. People were
you couldn't do anything.
Yeah, you couldn't get dressed by yourself. You couldn't like be in the bath by yourself. There was always people around.
I would hate that.
So she had to get used to that and she was a little bit shocked right away, but then she started to just like learn to kind of embrace like, okay, I guess I don't have to lift a finger. So if my husband won't sleep with me and I have nothing to do, literally no, like no one will leave me alone or let me do anything, then you know what? I guess I'm just going to wear the finest like materials. I'm going to live a life of luxury. She really got into gambling. And she was, you know, getting so over the top to the point where her hair and her wigs were like almost 3 feet tall.
3 feet tall wig.
She was wearing...
She made a statement, yeah, for sure.
She had nothing else to do with her time. So she was wearing band materials. Her mother, who still has, you know, an eye on Marie Antoinette, started writing to her harshly, being like, I'm hearing about your lifestyle. Like, what are you doing? You should be making kids right now. Like, why are you having parties every night?
She's 21.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what she was doing. She was in her party phase.
Yeah.
She loved pretty dresses. She had so many shoes. She also had this posse at court.
Yes.
She got rid of all the old
boring
people who were not satisfying her and they weren't fun. And she replaces them all with just very vibrant and fun people her own age. And it was a party scene.
It was a party.
This is 18th century style, the rich and famous.
Exactly. So it's like she's already unhappy with everything else. So this is where she's going to put all of her time and money. You know, and then it even put her and Louis onto even more different schedules because now she's staying up all night, sleeping through half the day, where he's going to bed early.
That sounds great.
Yeah, waking up early, hunting.
Eating macaroons and wine. Yeah. Basically us tonight.
I was going to say, it's kind of what we're doing.
Cheers.
Late. Do a little clink. So she's really embracing this lifestyle, and obviously, you know, all of her favorites at court are just, you know, around her. But, you know, it starts getting out a little bit about the excessiveness of everything, especially when she's gambling, because when she's gambling, she's like, she's squandering small fortunes. Like, she's putting in a lot of money.
And she's not good at it.
And she's bad at it because obviously she loses. She's not very smart.
She's kind of dumb.
You know, she's only good at music and dancing. So this gets out a little bit, you know, beyond the court, to the point where people in Paris and people around Versailles are starting to publish gossip pamphlets.
I love it. And the tabloids.
The tabloids. And they call them libels, which is kind of like, if you think of present day, libel.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. So they're called libels, and they're basically like, you know, National Enquirer, like Us Weekly, like whatever. I don't know. I don't read any of these gossip columns. We still do that.
I feel like things really haven't changed that much.
No.
Obviously, technology and styles and politics and everything else.
Right.
But people are still extremely curious and judgmental of the rich and famous.
Yes.
And they're so quick to point fingers.
Yeah.
But it was also amusing, and it was this like circus taking place in front of them.
Exactly.
There was even this rumor that she had wallpaper that was made of pure gold and diamonds.
Yeah.
And just and this is where the whole let them eat cake, which they're now saying, not now, but, you know, that was never a thing. So how much of this is rumor and just tabloids, and then how much of it was actually her just being a bad person?
Exactly. And it started to get pretty dark, some of this gossip, too, because at first it just started a little bit playful of they would depict, like, Louis as a pig who's just, like, kind of stupid and looking different directions, and then her as kind of, like, this, like, mischievous, like, puma-looking thing with claws. Like,
cool.
She just does whatever she wants. So the running joke was, like, Louis's an incompetent husband who can't bed his wife. You know, he's a bad ruler. He's indecisive. And she's just this crazy party animal who, like, runs everything at Versailles. So things start getting very dark to the point where people are saying she's, like, creating orgies at Versailles. Like, there's dark, you know, shit going on that, like, you know, only the royals could do, and they have all this money to support their dark habits. So things are getting so crazy that by the time, like, they're actually king and queen, you know, coronated and still haven't consummated the marriage, Marie Antoinette's brother actually steps in.
Mm-hmm.
So her brother, Joseph II, who's he's now the Holy Roman Emperor after the father dies. He knows how dire the situation is. So he comes to Versailles and he really buddies up to Louis. And he's kind of like the, I guess, older brother Louis didn't have, because I think Louis did have an older brother who passed when they were young. So he kind of says, hey, man, like, what's going on?
Let's have a talk.
I love the way they depict it, again, to reference the movie, the 2006 Marie Antoinette, because it's like Louis just pretends to be cool and, like, swings around a sword like, yeah, I know all about women and stuff.
And they're talking about locks and keys.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it just doesn't fit. And then there's, like, the elephant in the background with his trunk. Like, just so many
things.
It's just
of, like,
so underlined of all the everything going on.
Right. So Louis,
but it works.
It works.
The talk works.
Louis really liked Joseph II, and he kind of tells him. And, like, literally, I saw this in a few different documentaries. But according to, like, Louis II in private letters – or not Louis II, excuse me, Joseph II in private letters, he literally says he thinks sex is just, like, being on top of her, not moving. And then just, that's it. Like the
magical.
He didn't quite understand how everything worked and how rhythms are and how like climaxes work and things of that sort. He literally just thought it was like you just kind of put it there and something should happen, and it's not for whatever reason.
Poor children.
So he literally has to instruct him of like what to do in a sexual situation and how to produce a baby. And something clicks in Louis the 16th. He's like, oh. Duh. Okay.
And then Marie Therese was born.
And then within a year, they had their first child. Lo and behold, it works. So August 1777, their marriage is officially consummated. The fact that we know that is kind of funny.
Right.
Yeah. Like we know.
So documented.
When it happened. And then May of the next year, 1778, they announced that she's pregnant. And on December 19th, 1778 is when Marie Theresa Charlotte is born. So the first child is a little girl.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And they're on a bit of a roll after that. Yes. I mean, the people are still not a super fan of Marie Antoinette.
I'm going to pour a little bit of wine if you hear that. Oh, yeah, go for it.
She does have a second baby boy, finally, Louis Joseph Xavier Francois. And so they are now building their family up. More things keep happening, though, where the people are really disliking Marie. For example, I said how she had her little posse of cool friends, and she appointed her favorite, the Duchess de Polignac, as her governess to her kids, which sounds great. She gives her a 13-room apartment and just like dumps this like rich lifestyle onto her.
And her family.
Mm-hmm. So the people are more hypersensitive and aware of how much she's throwing money around, how she's raising others who may not be as qualified to be in that position. And these are also people who did not necessarily come from a rich lifestyle, but now they have all this money at their fingertips. So they're throwing it around. It is also important to mention how I think the government functioned at that point was the state paid for the royal family.
Yes.
So all of their funds came from taxes and everything from the state. And this is important because, as before in our previous go-around of this, we didn't really, really clarify exactly why they were mad at them. And I know it's easy to say they were throwing around money, but this is part of it. Marie claimed that 7% of the state's income went towards their court expenses, but that's very that number I'm sure was very much inflated at one point.
Well, they even said, like, you know, to point fingers at Louis's father, Louis the 15th, they said in his time half of the taxes you know went to his lifestyle. And you have to remember at this time, and we've talked about this on previous episodes, that the third estate, which is essentially the peasant class, were taxed the highest out of any class.
Made no sense.
And then some of their money had to go to the church. So it was taxes, church, and then whatever's left over is what you have to eat on.
Which there wasn't a lot to eat.
Yeah.
There's bread shortages. There's no food going around. November 2nd, on Marie's 28th birthday, she does have a miscarriage. And then there's all this talk of her with Count Axel von Fersen.
Ooh, that sounds dashing.
We are pretty darn certain at this point. 2016, they did come up with more evidence that there was an affair that took place. However, all their letters were destroyed at the time, so there's no actual proof of their correspondence. But more rumors start going around of her sexual deviance at court, and people are, she's the talk of the town.
Oh, yeah.
1783, she builds her beautiful retreat, which is a lot of money, more of the peasants' money going into her, just having more housing, more homes, more furnishings. It was popular for the nobility to have like a little mini village on their property.
Yeah.
And Versailles being such a big property, it wasn't unheard of. Right. But this is when Marie really started enjoying the arts. How did they phrase it in the movie? She had an artistic temperament. She loved, I mean, we know she's not a big reader, but she loved theater. She loved art. She even loved science. She endorsed the first hot air balloon, which was kind of a fun fact.
That is cool.
And then she has her own chateau, and she's entertaining all of these guests, and she has music and art and, again, fashion and food and just everything else. And the people are starting to call her an empty-headed foreign queen.
Mm-hmm.
1786, she has her fourth child. Did I skip a kid? There was a kid.
There was
in 1785.
Kid.
Ooh, this kid. This kid was actually important.
Yeah, we'll talk about
him. Louis Charles. Mm. He was born exactly 9 months after Fersen was in town.
Mm-hmm.
They did, but historians are pretty adamant it was Louis's children.
Right.
It also kind of matched up with their meetup. So,
right, okay, their conjugal
we'll
visit.
I love this. Marie is like into doing these theater and plays, and she's like impersonating peasants.
Yeah.
Which is really starting to turn people off.
Like,
on
she
her.
Thinks, and she, for her, I mean, she's kind of innocent, right? It's like, here's my cute little tiny, like, chateau that's off the main property, and I get to go and play like I'm a milkmaid, or play like
and
I'm
sweep
a
my little
farmer.
Broom and sing my little song and play
she
with
could
my
be
sheep.
A farmer in those clothes. So it's very like she's just having playtime with her friends and her children of like, let's go look at the chickens, let's go act like we're finding eggs, let's go act like we're, you know, hoeing the garden. And
people are actually doing this, but not for fun, and they're starving.
Yeah, and people are finding out about this. They're like, so not only is she so removed from, like, our society, but she has the time and the money to just play poor also. Like, she thinks it's funny.
She was just oblivious.
Yeah.
She had zero sense of awareness of the impression she was giving off.
Yes.
But she kind of gets a hand into politics.
Yes, she does. So there's like she starts to be a little bit aware of the general perception of herself. You know, she obviously her mother's already warned her of her frivolity and all of that. And once she does become a mother, she starts to turn around a few of her ways at court. She says, you know, we don't need all this heavy makeup and the wide hoops. She tries to go with a more like downplayed natural look. And that starts to translate to kind of how she's starting to think about things in court, too, where she wants to genuinely have an interest in her husband's affairs, you know, and in politics itself. She starts to look at the war that's happening in the colonies and saying, hey, like, I think we need to support these, you know, new Americans who are trying to create their own continent out there. You know, so she starts really just for the first time inserting herself in some issues that have a little bit more weight to them. So she becomes a little bit more outspoken in these regards. She does have a few blunders, though, that still prevent her from being perceived that way to the people. So again, we already mentioned like the plays and everything that's happening at her little chateau house, the whispers of her infidelity and if these kids are even hers. And then there's something that's called the affair of the diamond necklace that happens too, which is kind of the straw that breaks the camel's back when it comes to like her public perception. And this is a kind of a weird thing that happens. There's still a lot of speculation among historians, but the long and the short of it is that there was this huge necklace, this giant diamond necklace. It had something like 160 something large stones on it, large diamonds on it. And it was a necklace that was originally commissioned for Du Barry, that we talked about her, Madame Du Barry, who was Louis XV's mistress. So originally it was made for her, but it took so long for the jewelers to gather all of the diamonds that by the time it was finished, Madame Du Barry is long gone from court. So they kind of offer it to Marie Antoinette. They say, well, hey, you love lavish things. Do you want this necklace? And she does refuse it a couple of times. She's like, no, like, I'm kind of aware of my public perception. I probably shouldn't take this necklace. They offer it to her a second time. She's still like, I don't know. Like, I just don't think it's the right time. But she does want the necklace. So this is where it gets a little confusing because I think what had happened was she essentially tells like one of her helpers or something like, you know, I do want that necklace. I don't want it to be a public thing. I don't want it to look like how it's looking. So somehow this like kind of band of fraudulent like bandits gets involved and they know about her wanting to procure the necklace. So they essentially intercept the necklace. They act like they forge her signature and they act like they're involved in this transaction to get the necklace secretly. And they essentially run off with the necklace, dismantle it, sell it on the black markets and like in London and Paris, like it goes all over Western Europe at that point. Because they had realized that she wanted to keep it secret and she wouldn't actually come out to say like, oh, the necklace was was stolen because she didn't want to call attention to it. But to the public's eye, they knew about the necklace. They thought that she had demanded the necklace be made and then refused to pay for it because that's how entitled and like, you know, frivolous she was that she wasn't even willing to like pay for her own merchandise at that point. So that was kind of the last thing that happened, like, I think on the eve of the French Revolution, like right before the French Revolution broke
out. Interesting. Well, this is when everything is really boiling up too.
Yeah.
And just to paint a clear picture, also, side note, that was, I didn't know any of that stuff about the necklace. So that was pretty interesting. If you're wondering, like, why is France so broke right now? A few reasons. They were funding wars. Mm-hmm. The royal family was being paid out. And then the aristocrats were not willing to help contribute towards any of these funds. And they mm-hmm. were also very rich. So people are getting more and more upset. They're calling her Madame Deficit.
Yes.
She is now getting more of a say in the political party and trying to run some things, trying to figure out the finances of France in a very poor way. Mm-hmm. They revamped the National Assembly, yes. which is a meetings to figure out how are we going to fix this, basically.
Right.
Amongst all of this, their oldest son dies of tuberculosis.
Who's their heir, essentially.
Heir. Mm-hmm. They do have a spare, which is great, but, yes. You know, an heir and a spare. But they... Louis's falling into a deep depression. They are getting extremely stressed and they just lost their son, which everyone kind of seems to overlook because they're just focused on France's finances.
Right.
Riots start. The storming of the Bastille happens. There's the bread shortages. The crowd, a bunch of women start this.
Yes.
They start a mob getting to Versailles.
And when we did the Louis 16th episode, I don't think we realized it was a band of women. We knew that they had stormed Versailles, but I think it started as a band of women who were essentially saying, we can't feed our families. Like, you know, there's a bread shortage. Like, we can't even, you know, afford anything. You can. You have the food. So we're going to go to your house.
I mean, we didn't know a lot of things. I thought Les Miserables was during this period. So we're not going to talk about that.
We were young.
We were so dumb.
Silly.
They basically, the civilians somehow put the royal family on house arrest for so many words because right. they have completely dominated to the point where they have to try to escape. Mm-hmm. They had a few failed attempts. They try to dress up as servants. They need to get out of this house.
Right.
And they get arrested again by all of the peasants.
Right.
Like, they're just not giving them a break, and they're so mad at them. On June 21st, 1791, they tried one of their escapes. Mm-hmm. They get sent back. And at this point, they said Marie Antoinette's hair started turning white at this point.
Yeah.
From the stress of these mobs. A year later, they're still, we're going to call it house arrest in so many words is what it was. Mm-hmm. Another mob, barges in. They massacre their guards. They imprison them at what the English version is the Tower of the Temple.
Right, yeah.
So they're now out of Versailles. The family is separated. Marie still has her kids at this point. Mm-hmm. Two of them have passed. We should mention that.
Yeah, so there was two left.
The one with the TB and Sophie, the baby died at mm-hmm. 11 months.
Right. They also had several adopted kids, which we talked about in the Louis the 16th episode, but they're also gone at this point now too.
Oh yeah, they got nothing.
Taken away.
And then a lot of their family attendants. So, example, the Princess de Lamballe.
Yes.
She's the one in the movie with, like, the frizzy gray hair. She's, like, her friend.
Right.
They're getting captured and, I guess you can say it, and interrogated. She was mobbed, ran down by the mob, killed. Her head was put on a spike.
Yes.
We talked about this the first time we did this episode. We were really, really caught up on that.
That was a big one.
She paraded her head around.
Yeah. And the one thing we didn't mention from the first episode was that they wanted, obviously, Marie Antoinette to see her friend's head on a pike. And Marie saw or didn't see it.
She didn't see it.
They luckily, like, everyone she was with
averted her eyes.
Were like, you cannot look outside. Please do not look and see your friend's head. So she didn't. But when she learned that it was even happening, she passed out.
Yeah.
She was faint.
On the 21st of September, it was officially declared the fall of the monarchy, mm-hmm. which meant the National Convention is now ruling France and is what they called the Republic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we mentioned this again in the Louis the 16th episode, but he essentially is the first to go. He's found guilty of high treason. They have, again, just like a quick little trial where he essentially represents the monarchy and all the faults of the monarchy. So I believe it was January 15th, 1793. They put it to a vote of like whether or not he's guilty. Overwhelmingly, everyone says he's guilty. Zero say he should be acquitted. 20-something, like, abstain from the whole thing. And so they execute Louis the 16th. So he's beheaded on the 21st of January, 1793, again, by the guillotine. But at this point, Marie Antoinette's still alive. She's still imprisoned with her children. So now she is basically, and there's a really good quote on this, but her crown is taken away. And maybe you can mention the quote if you find it.
I do have the quote.
Okay. This is a good one.
It is a really good one.
Yeah.
She said, "I was a queen and you took away my crown. A wife and you killed my husband. A mother and you deprived me of my children. My blood alone remains. Take it, but do not make me suffer long."
That's good.
She says this at her trial, I believe.
Yeah.
Because at this point, her kids were taken away.
That's true. Yeah. So she was imprisoned with her children for a while. Children are taken away. She has nothing at this point. And again, they make it a very clear point that she no longer has any type of luxury, right? Like, she's not being held into nice quarters. We've talked about sometimes where they're held in like nice chambers while they await their trial and execution. They wanted to make it known that she was below dirt. Like, she didn't have anything nice to wear. She had no wigs, just like frizzy white hair. They said that she looked decades older than she was because she was only in her late 30s.
Stressed out.
Yeah. Guards would go up and blow smoke into her face. Like, just everything they could do to harassed make her feel, her. Yeah, like harassed and, you know, belittled. They were just completely torturing her.
They also took her son and her daughter, but they took her son away, kind of like brainwashed him and convinced him of how terrible his mother was because he was so young and impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
She had her trial on October 14th, 1793. They gave her no time to prepare. Not that like she, I'm sorry. She had to known this was coming.
She did.
But they gave a half a day's announcement for her lawyer to like put something together.
Right.
It took less than a day for them to prepare this defense. Some say that they already knew the outcome even just going into it.
Mm-hmm.
She's obviously guilty.
Yeah.
These are her charges. The depletion of the treasury of France.
Yep.
The conspiracy against the security of state and high treason for having intelligence of activities. And she was basically feeding Austria information about France when she shouldn't have been.
Right.
They also claimed that she had incest with her son, which is one of the gross things.
Creepy.
And that was one of the things they brainwashed him on and convinced him to say, yeah, my mom did this, which...
And he was like under 10 years old at this point, you know?
Had no idea what that even meant.
Yeah, he probably didn't even know what they were implying. Like, can you say this about your mother? He's like, sure, she loved me.
He didn't know what she held me.
Right.
They also said that there was orgies going on and just all this sexual, deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't respond to the allegation about the incest, and they called her out on it.
Right.
And she got to the point where other mothers in the courtroom were now calling for her and siding with her because she says something along the lines of, like, I'm a mother. I mean,
and
like,
she, what mother would what, ever,
why would I ever? Yeah. Yeah. And she got the sympathy of some people from doing that. But mm-hmm. That was on the 14th. By the 16th, she is set to be executed, and she's on her way to the gallows.
Yes.
Fast.
And at least Louis got a carriage.
Nope.
Because they literally threw her in the back of a cart, like next bench. To a priest who was very, you know, committed to the Republic. So it's like she's not going to talk to this.
She ignored him.
Revolutionary.
He's trying to, like, give her last confession, and she's ignoring him. She wanted to wear a black dress, but they mm-hmm. made her wear a plain white dress because that was the symbol of a widow, and at this point, Louis was dead.
Right.
Her hands were tied. Her hair is cut. She has a rope leash around her waist. Like, come on. Treat her. Give her some dignity here.
I know.
She was a queen.
Exactly. And that's what's sad when we've talked a lot about, you know, the queens that have been executed before. It's like usually they get to decide their gown. Like, sometimes they're with their handmaidens. Like, there's mm-hmm. sometimes – I know, obviously, your fate is still the same. You're being executed. But, yeah. like, at least you get the decency of, like – a final speech and, like, you know, some sort of a ceremony.
Think about the Tudors. Think about Mary Queen of Scots and Anne Boleyn, and they had speeches prepared. You're right. They were, like, making a show of it, and they're like, this is how I'm going to go out.
Yeah. This felt very mob style. It felt like, you know, like William Wallace almost, you know, just, like, throw him in the back of a cart, drag him through the street. Like, people just, like, shouting. Jeering and shouting obscenities at you. But they said she handled it very well. Like, there was no emotion and crying. It's kind of just like she accepted her fate as it came to her. She was, I won't say cool, calm, and collected, because obviously guillotine's scary. But, you know, but it wasn't a lot of emotion. And we talked about this on the first episode, but
I love the final words. Say it.
So there, when she finally steps up, you know, on the scaffold towards the guillotine, her final words on record were that she accidentally steps on the executioner's foot. And she says, "I'm so sorry. I didn't do it on purpose."
Yes.
Did I say it correct?
Yeah. Or pardon me. I did not do it on purpose, which is just so all encompassing of
symbolic
everything.
Yes.
I didn't do any of this on purpose. I just thought I was having fun. I didn't realize.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you have also ever been to Paris, her execution spot, which is where most of the French Revolution executions took place, that's not very, like, publicized, but it's the Place de la Concorde.
Concorde, yeah.
The really tall Egyptian oculuses that are in the middle of the giant circle, the roundabout.
Right.
And there's, like, the middle town square.
Yeah.
That's
it.
The actual spot where it happened.
That's wild.
I went there expecting to see a plaque or a sign or something, and it's not. They don't want, I think, really glamorize that period of history.
Yeah.
Because
initially, once she was executed, they just threw her in an unmarked grave somewhere. Like, you know, her and Louis were just kind of like, again, at this point, it's the Republic of France. We don't care about nobility. We don't care about royals. So they did that. And it wasn't until, like, the new king had taken over in the 1800s where they were like, they wanted to exhume their bodies and actually put them in the correct burial spot and all of that. But initially, they were treated like dogs, which is, again, like, obviously, you know, they were just, I don't want to say political pawns. I think for them, they really felt like, oh, they have a divine right to rule. So thus, any decision they make is probably backed by God. And, you know, they didn't know anything else aside from that. They were raised, you know, in privilege. They were told, here's what you have to do to rule. They had very little guidance and became king and queen when they were 19 and 18.
I really think they were scapegoats. And people have used Marie Antoinette as the face of the revolution, of something to be angry about, of the frivolous spending. And yes, she could have budgeted a little bit better. There was a lot of other things going on, though. Right. And
Louis also gave her a bunch of things, too, because he felt so incompetent as a husband sexually. So, again, you're being told by your mother, hey, go observe the customs of France. Do what they do. Like, be like they are. And you have a husband who feels bad about not taking you to bed. So he's like, here's the chateau and here's all these gowns and I don't know what to do with you. Here's a bunch of money. So all she's told is, yes, be a good wife and accept everything they give you. So she's like, okay, I guess this is how I please people.
Who's to blame?
Right?
So many people could have said.
Yeah.
No.
I know. And again, she wasn't the brightest crayon in the box.
But she was beautiful
and could
dance. Head or no head.
And sing, head or no head.
Oh, we've gone over time. There was so much to pack into There was a lot. So thanks for sticking with us. I think we did her a little bit. We fixed it. We did her some more justice. But we could go on about her forever. So we do want to talk about this more. So comment. I will post some things. I want to hear your opinions.
Yes.
Elizabeth? Any final words?
Not today.